Continuing reflections on the teaching of dependent origination. Today, I just like to do a very brief recap of dependent origination, but then look at more the teaching of dependent origination, we could say, is a description of how suffering is happens in our minds. It's, I would call it a description rather than a practice. It describes the conditions by which suffering arises, what happens in the mind, where the mind is clinging. The arising of ignorance in particular seems to be a key factor. Sometimes the teaching of, the name of the teaching, dependent origination, is called dependent co-arising. And I like that phrasing of it because when ignorance is arising with anything, when it's co-arising with anything, essentially that is one of the foundational conditions for suffering to follow. So the description of dependent origination is this set of links, a set of conditions that support the arising of suffering. Ignorance, the basic one, with ignorance as a condition, our habits and patterns of mind are shaped to be inclined towards interpreting things in a particular way, interpreting that we should get what we want, get rid of what we don't want, that greed is going to help us, that aversion is going to help us. So ignorance is basically it's messing with our minds. And that ignorance shapes how our mind decides, chooses, acts. And that shapes how we receive experience, the consciousness, what we take in, how our minds and bodies respond. And from there, we have our feeling, the contact with our world. And because of the shaping of the mind from that perspective of ignorance, we tend to, you know, gravitate to pleasant, to get the pleasant, to get rid of the unpleasant. So this is the process that's described. And with that, the feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, or neither pleasant nor unpleasant, when ignorance is present, when the mind is shaped by that belief that getting something pleasant would be a good thing for me, holding on to that pleasant thing, getting rid of that unpleasant thing is how I'm going to find happiness, then the mind acts on that, moves in the direction of craving, clinging, intentions towards identities around the one who has gotten this thing. Those begin to arise. So we become a person who has that thing and we identify, that's mine now. And so that is all part of this process too. So that is all shaped by ignorance kind of at the beginning of the chain. And the suffering is what follows all of this, or actually in my own experience, it feels more like when, when as soon as craving springs up, you know, feeling doesn't have to have suffering with it. It doesn't have to be experienced as the kind of suffering that's a result of craving. The Buddha said in one particular teaching that people who are fully awakened will experience pleasant, unpleasant, neutral experience. People who are caught in the usual everyday mind states will experience pleasant, unpleasant, neutral experience. And so he said, so what's the difference between them? He said, well, when somebody who's fully awakened experiences a pleasant sensation, they experience a pleasant sensation. When they experience an unpleasant sensation, they experience an unpleasant sensation. When somebody who is an ordinary person experiences an unpleasant sensation, they resist it, they fight it, they don't like it, they think it's a problem, a whole host of reactivity is born. When they experience a pleasant experience, they want to hold on to it. They want to get it. They think that that's the way to finding happiness. So they're craving, they're holding on. And so the feeling itself doesn't have to be suffering. But the next link, as soon as craving arises, I mean, it sounds like from this chain of dependent origination that craving is a condition that supports the arising of suffering. But in my experience, when craving is arising, suffering is already arising. That experience of craving, that experience of I need, it already has that tension in it. It already has a constriction in it. And so the experience of craving is already suffering. And that is actually the way the second noble truth is a good way to translate the second noble truth. Often the second noble truth is translated something like, the origin of suffering is craving. There is suffering, and the origin of suffering is craving, or the cause of suffering is craving, making it sound like craving is one thing and suffering is a different thing. But the word there that's translated as origin or cause, several translators have pointed out that the word is much more used to mean when something arises. So it can just translate as the arising of. And so that second noble truth can be phrased with the arising of craving is the arising of suffering. And that's very congruent with my actual experience. So I think that that's, this whole teaching of dependent origination, we could think of as an elaboration on this second noble truth. With the arising of craving is the arising of suffering. And why does craving arise? Because of ignorance in the mind. So this is a description of how suffering comes to be. It's not a practice. I mean, we don't practice dependent origination. It just unfolds for us as we're not aware of how our minds are functioning. And yet there is some good news in the teaching of dependent origination in describing how suffering comes to be. The Buddha also points to that these are conditions for the arising of suffering. And if any of these conditions are changed, then the rest of the pattern falls apart. So we could say that, I mean, this teaching does point to in certain ways, how can suffering end? With the ending of craving is the ending of suffering. That's a statement of the third noble truth. Possibility of the ending of suffering. And what is that ending of suffering? The teaching says the ending of that craving is the ending of suffering. The ending of ignorance would be the ending of that suffering. So the conditions in this chain of dependent origination are, we could say they're necessary conditions for the arising of suffering. If you don't have these conditions, suffering will not arise. So let's just look at how this might work with a particular link, a particular exploration. So when craving is arising, the craving is arising. In the moment that craving is arising, suffering is already arising. But as soon as we add a new condition, change the condition of it to just be, instead of being just habitually following that craving, turning instead towards what is this experience of craving? Bringing mindfulness to the experience of craving itself. as we do that, we might start to see something different. We might start to understand the arising of craving in a different way. We might understand that it is an arising in the first place, that it's just simply something that's coming up that's got its own conditions. And we may even see, I've seen sometimes when I see something arising, how ephemeral it is. At one point, seeing the arising of self-hatred in my mind, just seeing this is just a thought. You know, there's nothing like really very solid about this. It wasn't there 2 seconds ago, and now it's here, and suddenly the mind is believing it and catching it. And so this is this process of the mind kind of looping around an idea or a belief and picking it up and holding on to it, creating an identity out of it. But sometimes when we can just see that this is an arising, see that it's just a thought arising, the mind can just understand, oh, this is just something that's arising. And for me, that is what happened in that moment. The mind understood, oh my gosh, this is just a thought in the mind. This has no reality other than what the mind is giving it. It's just a thought. And so that seeing of it as an arising, turning with mindfulness to what was happening in experience, noticing the arising of that tension, that tightness, that kind of that whole pattern of a belief arising in the mind around being no good, being an unworthy person. And the craving around, wanting to be worthy, you know, in a paradoxical way, that craving springs up in dependence on the belief that I'm not worthy. It's all just the mind doing this. So seeing it, bringing the condition of mindfulness, a curiosity to what is this experience, changes the conditions that unfold in dependent origination. There's a teaching. It's in the Majjhima Nikaya. The sutta puts the teaching not in the Buddha's mouth. It describes it as another monastic offering the teaching. One of his lead disciples, Shariputra, offers this teaching. And Shariputra was one of those that seemed to offer very detailed and precise kinds of teachings. And this is one of those. He looks at every single link of dependent origination. He goes through every single link of dependent origination and says, if this is what's arising, how can you be free here? So he takes every single link and points to the possibility of seeing it's arising, the possibility of seeing it ending, the possibility of seeing, first of all, the thing. So it's the possibility of seeing, oh, this is craving, or this is clinging, or this is anger, or this is frustration, or this is confusion, whatever it is. That's what's here. And then noticing it's arising, noticing it's ceasing. He says, if you can see experience in that way, in that moment, freedom will follow. So even if ignorance is arising in a moment, kind of inclining feeling to head to craving, so ignorance is arising, pleasant sensations arising. There's this kind of, oh, wanting to like jump on that feeling and go get it, reach out, have it. If in that moment, so ignorance has arisen in the past there. Ignorance has arisen and there's this kind of impulse or movement towards this chain of dependent origination unfolding, the feeling leading to craving, to clinging, to becoming, to identification, to suffering. If in the moment in that moment of that feeling arising, mindfulness arises and curiosity arises. And there's a seeing of, oh, this is a pleasant experience. Seeing the mind kind of leaning towards it, seeing that kind of initiation towards craving. In that moment, the craving can fall away and suffering will not follow. So this is like the necessary, the conditions are necessary. So feeling is a necessary condition for craving. But when mindfulness is present with feeling, feeling does not have to lead to craving. And likewise with the other ones, craving is a necessary condition for clinging. But if mindfulness is arising with seeing the craving, seeing that movement, that pulling, that kind of reaching towards, then the mind can let go of that. Another experience I had, I often talk about this moment. It was a transformative moment in my life in very early part of my practice. First really clear insight I ever had, where I was watching anger a lot early in my years of practice, just noticing it, getting really familiar with anger. And at one point I was doing something in my kitchen. I was cutting an apple and I saw this thought arise in my mind about the person I was angry with. In this moment, I saw that I was not angry, but I felt the impulse to jump on that thought about that person and think more thoughts to get angry with them. So I felt the leaning towards, it was like this freight train of like, oh yeah, let's get angry. And yet the seeing of it, that the mindfulness saw that movement in the direction of anger. And the fact that over the past, whatever it was, month or so of looking at experience, looking at anger and seeing how painful it was, how much suffering it was, in that moment, the wisdom arose with that seeing that said, yeah, if you do that, you're going to suffer. And the mind just let it go. So that was, you know, that was the ignorance was there in the mind stream that says, yeah, jump on that thought and think more thoughts to get angry. And wisdom arose in a split second that said, that's gonna create suffering. And it fell apart in a split second. That movement towards anger just let go. So mindfulness is the good news here. Mindfulness and curiosity about what is happening. And the good news too, is that in this teaching that Shariputra gave, it's like every single link of dependent origination he points to and says, yeah, you can get free there. Yep, you can get free there. It does not matter what's arising. He said, bring mindfulness to it. It's like you don't have to stop the chain. You don't have to cut into it in any particular point. Often we talk about the feeling craving link. And, you know, if you just experience feeling, it won't lead to craving. It's like, yes, that's true. And yet you don't have to stop it there. It's like you will experience some suffering when it moves into the craving, but that also it also is still possible to, in the midst of something challenging, difficult, in the midst of something that is suffering, to experience freedom. We don't have to wait until the suffering goes away in order to find the freedom. That was one of the big kind of ahas in my earlier practice, that, you know, I kind of thought, oh, I got to get all of this like reactivity out of my mind, and then I'll be able to be with the breath, and then I'll be able to see it really clearly, and that's when I'll be able to have freedom. Like, actually, I found so much more possibility for learning and freedom in the midst of looking at self-hatred. in the midst of looking at my reactivity, that's where a lot of the freedom came. And so that's what Shariputra's pointing to. It doesn't matter what's happening. Bring the mindfulness to it. Bring the curiosity about experience. Freedom is possible in any moment. Doesn't matter what's happening. So that's kind of the good news of these teachings. You know, yes, he describes in great detail how suffering comes to be. But this very simple tool, being aware of what's happening with that curiosity of what is this human experience, that is the good news. It's transformative. Let me just see if there's anything more in my notes here. I think that's probably enough. I'm curious, what are your thoughts?
Thank you for the teaching. My question was, so for many mind states, like whether it's anger or you could think of anxiety, for example, there's almost a propensity to be addicted to those mind states. And so awareness by itself is not enough. And somehow you need to substitute whatever you are, the negative part of those mind states with something different. So it's like there's a mind space and you need to fill up with something that substitutes for whatever is that, whether it's anger or whether it's anxiety. Anxiety is easier to work with because it's obviously a negative mind state, but the awareness of anxiety is not always helpful in reducing anxiety.
It's true that at certain times in our practice, the potency of the mind state is stronger than the capacity for mindfulness in that moment. So, you know, it's almost like if you try to turn to be aware of that anger or that anxiety, it's like you just get caught in it. You just, it's trying to be mindful of it. You just get pulled into the rabbit hole or the quicksand of it. That definitely is true. And so we do need to learn some skillful means to, you know, what might support you when you feel that kind of pull into the rabbit hole. So it's important to distinguish that for yourself when the mindfulness is strong enough to actually meet the experience. But I do want to point to the possibility that there are times, and more often than we maybe give our minds credit for, that we do have the capacity to meet the experience. Now, that doesn't mean it goes away in an instant. Often it kind of hovers. It maybe gets a little stronger, a little weaker. You know, it's kind of like, it doesn't just like disappear often. In my own experience, it's like I spent years looking at anger and, you know, had this one experience pretty early in my practice that gave me a lot of confidence. But I spent years following that, continuing to look at anger and seeing at times that it wasn't so helpful to try to turn towards it, to be mindful of it. So I learned some strategies. Well, there's a lot of different strategies. The Buddha actually offers a whole bunch of them. And some of them are, you know, replacing. So you could replace, for instance, with thoughts of anger, with thoughts of kindness. You could bring in metta. You can just redirect the attention, turn your attention to something else entirely, take your attention out of the thing that's kind of fueling that anxiety or that anger. Put your attention on something else, just redirect your attention. So there's tools to support us for that. But I think sometimes we may shift more quickly, partly out of aversion to the state. You know, as we become aware with mindfulness of the state, we realize how unpleasant it is. And that unpleasantness can kind of fuel some aversion. It's like, oh, this can't be good. I shouldn't be feeling this. And so we don't necessarily trust that the mindfulness is strong enough to hold that experience. And so we feel like, okay, better do something so that this anger isn't here. There's a kind of belief that if the anger is in the mind stream at all, it's damaging somehow. But there is a way that when the mind is holding it with mindfulness, it's kind of like if you've got a car on the freeway and you're going 100 miles an hour, you know, that you've got your foot on the accelerator, the gears are engaged, and you know, you're just going fast, you know, the gears are engaged. That's like what's happening when the mind is engaged in its reactivity. It's, you know, it's just tumbling forward with it. It's got that addictive quality. You know, it fuels itself. And yet, using the analogy of the car, if you put the car into neutral while you're going 100 miles an hour down the freeway, disengage the gears, the car is not going to stop. It's not going to come to a stop when it goes into neutral. But it will slow down over time. And the gears not being engaged, it's like the gears engaged is like the thoughts fueling the state of mind, you know, thoughts, state of mind, and they're just feeding each other, the thoughts, the state of mind, and then more thoughts come, the state of mind gets worse. So when the gears are engaged, the mind state is just strengthening. But in the gears example, if we put the gears into neutral, put the car into neutral, then there can't be the forward momentum in the same way. It's not that you're continuing to fuel the forward momentum. It will come to a stop at some point with the gears disengaged. And so mindfulness of our difficult mind states is like disengaging the gears. It doesn't necessarily make it stop immediately, but we begin to get a sense of the difference between what it's like to have the mind just engaged in that churning versus what it's like to know the churning. And so that distinction, understanding that distinction, is really important in our mindfulness practice. Because if we're immediately kind of turning towards something else when we see you know, when we feel a reactive mind state and we think, oh, better move away from it, then we may be kind of unwittingly reinforcing an aversion, you know, by, you know, it's like, oh, can't be with this, so better shift. And yet there are definitely times when the wise choice is to set it aside or bring in something else. So learning that for each of us, learning that distinction is so crucial in our practice. And it's like an art form, because it's not always the same, you know, it depends on all kinds of conditions, whether we have the capacity to meet something or not. And I will often say that, you know, if it feels like when you turn with mindfulness to a particular difficulty, if it feels like that difficulty is getting stronger or pulling you into it, then probably that's probably not the time to be with it. If it feels like it's kind of roughly staying the same or kind of wavering a little bit, there's some capacity there. So you may be able to hover with it for a little while, learn something about it. If it's hovering like that, at some point the mind will probably get tired of engaging. You know, it's kind of, as the mind engages with a difficult reactive state of mind, it has a certain capacity for that. And if it starts to feel like the mind is getting heavy or tired, then that might be then time to turn to something else. So learning all of this is part of our practice. So yes, there are definitely times when we need to pick up some other tools and put something else into the mind. But there are also times when mindfulness is enough. And so just to hold that possibility. It's sometimes more, we have more capacity than we give ourselves credit for. So I like to suggest that you try, you know, give it a chance. See if it's possible. And, you know, it may only be for 10 seconds. And then it's like, okay, that's enough. Let me pick up my tool. But yeah.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the question.